Welcome to Bimmercast number 41. It is December 22nd. Tonight we're going to be talking about the BMW 1M. We're going to be going over some options, talking about some of the details on delivery, talking about European delivery, and a few details that you won't hear anywhere else. We're also going to be talking about the Vision Concept turned production car and why it may cost upwards of $200,000. And we're going to also touch on the Project I and what we're actually going to be, when we're going to be seeing these cars, these electric carbon fiber cars, and what we're going to be all done. So stay tuned. Okay, we're back, and I know we just finished a 1M show about a week and a half ago. We've got a bit of a follow-up tonight. First thing on our plate is to talk about the 1M. But before I do that, I want to introduce, of course, Michael. Hello.
How's it going, Gabe?
And we also have Matt, who's joining us. And I think that last time Matt was on was right around Elkhart Lake LMS race.
That's true. Absolutely.
So Matt's joining us via one of those huge satellite phones, I'm just assuming, in the desert somewhere.
Yeah, that's where you can find me.
Okay. And of course, Michael, you and I are in our normal locations, and I think I've can definitely say I've got the snow covered for everybody.
Mm. I'm not jealous.
I enjoy it. The fact that I could hold a drift for most of a city block last night just made my day.
Well, see, Gabe, that's why you need an M product. You could do that when it's dry out.
Yeah, but then I'd have to get new tires a lot.
Yeah, tires, it's an expenditure of fun.
Yeah, so I'm not the only one who enjoys driving in the snow, then, clearly.
I'm sure there's some listeners out there who enjoy driving in the snow. And, of course, a rear-wheel drive car is the way to go, as far as I'm concerned, in the snow. Especially for enjoyment. So let's talk about this 1M, which I know we've talked a lot about this car. I mean, there's no question about it, but at the same time, we also have a lot of listeners interested in it. So we're going to touch on the latest info, and that's, number one, the thing is actually orderable at this point, and I am happy to announce that I have ordered my own 1M as of December 20th. An Alpine white model, and the one thing, and Matt, I think you could probably chime in here as well.
Uh-huh.
I know you have some interest in it, but the one thing that I immediately saw and was just incredibly disappointed in is the fact that I can only get a couple options via the overwrought packages that are on the car. So, for instance, I just wanted navigation and Bluetooth. I didn't want electric seats. I didn't want auto dimming anything. I didn't want anything else. I didn't want a park distance control, keyless entry. I just wanted navigation and Bluetooth. And to do that, I have to order both the convenience and the premium package. And the thing that really irks me, and I think irked a lot of other people, is the fact that the normal 1 Series doesn't do this. There's, in fact, a lot of BMWs don't require you to order those packages to get those two options. So, Michael, obviously you can understand, I'm a little more than annoyed and considering just going with a completely stripper model now.
Wow, not a surprise to me, Gabe. Not a surprise from a lot of angles, but I can tell you that our friends at BMW M and BMW North America have, taken a look at just the general feel from the site and comments and opinions that we have expressed, other people have expressed, and they are looking at the packages and the options they have ordered, not to say that they're going to change anything, but they are looking at possibly making some adjustments.
That is welcome news. That is welcome news.
So I think, Matt, you're even in a more extreme situation where you just wanted the iPod USB adapter, and you literally had to order the premium package to get that one option. If you buy a car,
I mean, right. I mean, if for what most people, me, would use the car for. I don't need anything apart from not getting arrested for talking on my phone. So for that, I need Bluetooth, or I have to carry around a hands-free in my glove box. And if the option's available, a la carte, why shouldn't it be on this car? I mean, that's what I found.
So, and Michael, you're telling us that, based on your information, BMW is listening to our feedback. I mean, you know, to be frank, I think it's they often do. We know they read the site. We know them, and they are considering making some changes based on it.
Well, there have been some changes at BMW, which we can officially announce now. There's been some changes with Martin Berkman has left BMW North America, and he's actually, and Martin was basically head of product planning, strategy. Basically, Martin controlled all of the cars coming to the U.S., and he also ran the racing program, basically BMW North America Motorsport. That was his little, I guess you could say, toy. But Martin has actually left BMW North America, and he has rejoined BMW AG, the group. And he's now in charge of advanced powertrain for BMW Group. So he'll be basically with motors for Mini, BMW, and Rolls-Royce. So, you know, Martin was a good friend of ours, and it's sad to see him go. But he's moved on to bigger and better things. And slotting into Martin's role is actually Larry Koch, and Larry was the M brand manager. So he is moving from M brand manager into Martin's position at BMW North America Motorsport, and also is going to have some input, if not full input, again, into the product planning and strategy. So he will be guiding some of the future automobiles in the U.S. And we're also able to say, this hasn't been announced yet, but we're going to let it out here, is that Matthew Russell will be replacing Larry Koch as the new M brand manager. And we know Matt well, and he has been with corporate communications, and before that he was with after sales, and he's worked his way up through the ranks at BMW. He's an enthusiast just like all of us. He has a passion for BMWs like nobody else, honestly.
I have to say that, you know, this is not lip service, and every one of those guys is, you know, are truly, and I use air quotes here, good guys. I mean, we're all enthusiasts on this podcast, and on, of course, Bimmerfile, and we know each of them, and they truly have our best interests in mind. And I think some of the stuff that you're talking about as far as the changes, I would have to assume that some of the changes we've seen in personnel and some of the changes that we're alluding to may be happening are related.
Well, they are. Yeah. They're track junkies, too. I mean, we know they have personal.
Oh yeah, absolutely. All of them are very enthusiastic track drivers. You know, Matt has his E30 race car, so he's big into taking the car to the track and doing things like that. And we'll see him around. You know, I think he's going to make himself very available to people out there as the M brand manager. And you know, Larry's done a great job as well, and he's going to do a great job with the team and everything else. And you know, we wish Martin all the best, and he's going back to Germany. But so some of these changes with the positioning have maybe changed views on packages and different ways of, you know, bringing a car to market. I guess the, you know, it's not a better way, it's not anything, it's just a different way of looking at things. And I think we're going to see maybe a little paradigm shift in the way packages are put together, because it's also worth noting that, you know, a few years ago when I had my M3, you know, built and all that great stuff, we had this technology package, which was a load of crap, and you had to get all this stuff in it. But BMW has actually moved away from technology packages. They pretty much don't exist anymore. So that's why I think you're starting to see bits and pieces of these technology packages put in, like, the premium package. Mm-hmm. Now you have this newfound convenience package, and some of the a la carte stuff has been removed, but I think we're going to start seeing all that stuff come back.
Well, I think that's fantastic because, you know, what we are used to, and I say we, to be frank, a younger generation of buyer and an M buyer,
we're used to getting,
and we, yeah, I mean, so some of us, all three of us have owned Minis, for instance. The Mini buying process is you buy literally what you want. It's 100% a la carte if that's the way you want to go. And I think at a higher level, we've all become accustomed to getting exactly what we want when we want it. Individual options, you know, whatever it is, we can create our own of anything. And the notion that, you know, you have to buy a package to get this and another package to get that is just, that seems a little antiquated, to be honest with you. It feels like it's the kind of thing that you would expect on an Acura. And, you know, it doesn't make any sense on a BMW. Now, I will say those packages are important for some people. So, for instance, on a 328 that you sell the heck out of and you lease a ton of them, a package like the premium package makes a lot of sense to offer, as any premium package on any BMW makes a lot of sense, you know, to some people. I do want, for instance, I want leather and I want this and that. And great, there's a package. I can save $800 on it and get everything I want. Now, BMW can manufacture these things at a certain clip and sort of, you know, confirm that there's going to be so much take on leather and whatnot. I mean, it helps everybody. But on a car like the 1M, we all want our own. You know, we want something that really, truly sort of resembles our need. And that's where I was just so annoyed more than anything.
And from my perspective on the 1M, a car that is ostensibly, you know, from all intents and purposes, very minimalist in its approach to being a driver's car, to when you come down to order it, you're forced to, you know, spec it up entirely. You want two things. You're interested in two, so you have to buy 10. I mean, you just don't have the choice. That's what it seems.
That's literally
a good dissonance or something.
It's actually 11 options between the convenience and premium packages, and I wanted two of them.
Right, and it's frustrating. But, you know, the other way of looking at it is we take ourselves out of the enthusiast chair, and honestly, of late, people that buy these cars, M buyers, whatever, whoever's driving BMWs, is they, you know, they want all this crap.
But
and
so,
and it makes it really complicated for somebody to go through and, like, go buy this, go buy that, go buy this, go buy this, go buy this.
Yeah,
you know, like,
true.
If you look at a big, huge option sheet with 25 options on it, and your average Joe, who doesn't really know much about cars, but they know, oh, it's an M, that means it's the best.
Yeah, but average Joe isn't buying a 1M. The 1M isn't for the average Joe.
Well, I think in concept it's not for the average Joe, but there's a lot of people out there that'll see an M badge, it's under $50,000, and poof, you know, that's what they want. It's not anything that they're ever going to take to the track. It's just, I have an M, honestly. I mean, that's the way I look at it. I mean, I live in an area of the country where I can go park my car in a parking lot, and I will see six other M cars in the parking lot. You know, it's not very exclusive where I am. And, you know, a lot of these people don't ever even know what, you know, how to use an M button or even what, you know, dynamic mode is. I mean, it's just a fact of life where we're driving cars that
I agree, but I think there's something to what Matt said. I mean, I think back to the E46 that I saw about 4 years ago. It was a new car at the time. It was 2006. And it had a scrunchie around the SMG shift knob. And that was like this watershed moment when I looked at that car and I thought to myself, you know, this means nothing other than this is the most expensive 3 Series that you can buy your daughter.
Yep.
That's what that car meant to the person who bought it.
Exactly.
So I do think the 1M, and we talked about this before, I think, Matt, you've articulated it well. The 1M is great. It is a great car for what it is not. You know, it is a manual transmission only car. Right there, you have limited yourself to a certain kind of person.
Somebody that has a left leg?
Somebody who has a working left leg. not a actual real left leg, but a working left leg. No, in all seriousness, there are enthusiasts out there that have paddle shifts, you know, flappy paddle gearboxes, whatever you want to call them. I'm not going to get into that debate right now, but there is a certain kind of enthusiast who wants to drive a manual, and that's what this car is for.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And it's, you know, it's going to be interesting to see who's driving these things and how, you know, all that great stuff and how many they actually build. But Another thing that we were able to break the news on about the 1M is that you can pick the thing up in Europe, Gabe, at the Welt.
So that's exciting. I am going to go on a limb and say I will likely be doing that myself.
That's fantastic. And I probably, honestly, Gabe, I will be riding shotgun in the car if you have an extra spot. So, because I'm not giving up my my M3 at this
point. Well, and you shouldn't. And I think there's gonna be a few people over there. I know Matt, you've come around, vacillated back and forth, and I don't know where you are currently with your thoughts around buying the car, but I assume if you do, you'd probably be over there picking it up as well.
I would be, and I'm at the point of I can, but I don't know if I should.
Yeah, I am.
Based upon my potential use to kill it as a commuter, but a car ceases to exist if it's not used.
That's very true. I couldn't say it any better than that. But and we'll have some more news about some possibilities going on with the European delivery.
Mm-hmm.
Some things that may occur in the future. There's going to be an announcement sometime in January after Detroit or possibly during Detroit about the availability of cars for European delivery and some things that might occur if you pick your car up in Europe.
Sounds fantastic. Can we talk about the engine yet, Michael?
Sure, we can discuss the engine, Gabe. What would you like to know about that engine?
Well, we know that it is primarily based on the Z435IS, but we've also always kind of had a hunch that there's some differences, some internal differences that haven't really been spoken about yet. And I know that we're going to get some details on it, but I'd love to be able to break a little bit of that. Let's just say before the holidays.
Before the holidays. Yeah, well, it is true. This is a holiday time of year. I hope everyone's enjoying themselves. And thinking about what M does, M likes to take a motor and fine-tune it, say, you know, with things that rotate on the inside and making sure those things that rotate are exactly the way they should be. Just a couple of things that rotate in a motor might be, say, you know, rods or pistons and things of that nature. M kind of looks at those things and makes adjustments to them.
So it's definitely M creates engines that last on the track, that have a certain longevity built into them, certain robustness, if you will. The other thing they do is traditionally they've created engines that rev quickly, and of course rev high, and this is a twin turbo, so that's not as much the case as a naturally aspirated V8 as in the E90 M3, but we know that they've lightened the flywheel in this car. Now, the reason I bring that up is we also know that the Z435IS has a lightened flywheel, and I'm just curious, and we may not know the answer to this, is it the same flywheel? If it is, did M work on the Z435IS in the same capacity?
The Z435IS was a parallel project along with the 335IS. There were two separate projects that kind of merged in the middle to the end, as I guess you could say. They are a bit different. The 335IS being offered with the manual transmission has the lightened flywheel. The Z435IS is DCT only. So the flywheel is different in that aspect, but it is a dual mass flywheel in the M. The 1M, and it's more along the lines of the same system, say, in the M3. They just took some weight off of it. So it is definitely a specific flywheel for this vehicle.
Does that speak to more of the bits that go around inside the engine, though?
The bits that go around in the engine are also finely tuned by the wizards over there at M. Think of it as how they did with the X5 and the X6 M. They basically took a base block and tweaked it to their liking, and that motor has been fantastic since day one.
And can we anticipate this as a little bit more of a shift in the way M approaches the total car package?
I think this is more, moving forward, there's still going to be specific models with specific engines. The M3, for example, will, as the quote-unquote halo vehicle of the M brand, feature specific motors for that. But when you have the X5 and the X6 M's using you know, a base block and then modifying it. That was really the door opening until M taking a standard issue motor and making it better and making it an M motor. So this would be the next logical step in that whole process with this N54 tweaking. Going forward, sure, there'll be other versions made by M. You know, it's sort of how, you know, here's foreshadowing in the future as well, sort of how Alpina does some cool things with motors.
Okay.
If that helps at all. Yeah. That, you know, Alpina's been doing some fantastic things. That B7 is just killer.
Yeah,
so absolutely. That might foreshadow, like, what comes up with the M5 and how the M5 motor is going to be and, you know, things like that.
Fair enough.
Can't disclose too much too soon, Gabe.
Absolutely. I think unless you guys have any more 1M talk, I mean, I know we've done it to death. I'm excited. Everybody's excited. I and we've got a lot more to talk about. But we should probably hold off talking much more about the 1M until we get closer to Detroit.
And yeah.
Matt and I will be there covering that event, and we'll have the 1M in our grasps, if you will, up close and personal, and we'll be talking about that. Going to be talking to the folks at BMW about it as well, so we're going to have a ton of coverage at that time.
Yeah, the only additional feature I have is that the thing looks sick in Alpine white.
It does. I know I got a tip off on some photos on, I think it was oneaddicts.com, and they look good. Somebody took some pretty, can I just say, terrible photos.
Crap. They're crap. The car looks good.
With a camera phone, really poor, and it still looks fantastic. And you know, I've got to say, Matt, I know you you were gung-ho about orange. I've been gung-ho about white for a while, and I'm starting to feel pretty good about the choice.
I think orange is better.
I love the Alpine white, and for a long time I felt the same way. But the genesis of this car, the Pirate, code name, as it were, I mean, there's something about the, you know, the two fingers in the air, screw you, about the bright orange that just speaks to me. I don't know if ultimately I get to that point and make the decision whether it would be orange, but I love the idea.
I do too. Well, it's just if it wasn't, and we talked about this, if it wasn't metallic,
I agree with you.
I would have to get the orange.
I'm very, very disappointed that it's metallic, but even still, BMW,
well, it has
an
to
orange
be metallic.
BMW.
It has to be metallic. It has to be an adder. Got to make money on these things.
I would have paid extra for the orange and had it not metallic. Put it that
way. They could charge me the same. They could double the cost for the metallic paint and give me orange.
The only thing I like about the white, and I'm going to be dead straight here, is you can put M stripes on the bottom, running right along the sill, and it looks sick.
Yeah, it's true. I would agree.
There you go. We're going to start selling those things as soon as this car comes out.
No, in all seriousness, that would look fantastic. And, I, you know, one of the things, not to get too much into this, but, I mean, you know, looking at that white car, the first thing I would do if I, oh, wait, I am going to order one of these things is black grille. And is it wrong to put the BMW Performance carbon fiber spoiler on the back of that thing?
No, man. I'd be all over that.
That's seriously the first thing I want to do to that car. I mean, the white on black, black on white would be great.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Good times. Exciting. So let's move on to something less exciting. I mean, more exciting. the VED.
The VED, the chief of the BMW I platform there, as it were. What is it going to call that? The i9 then?
Yeah, I'm not really sure. It's a good question.
It's the stupidest naming ever.
Well, should we talk about that first? The whole naming convention they've got, because
talking about it. I think it's retarded.
What happened today is that BMW somehow leaked out. BMW had officially registered the i for their sub brand, so it's going to be BMW i. Therefore, you can imagine, and they've already registered these names: BMW i1, i2, i3, i4, i5, and so on. And all the way to I-9, which just sounds like a highway to me.
It does.
So, I mean, the vision concept, you can imagine that that's just basically an I-6. or maybe an i8, for instance.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but, you know, they're building the thing. It's a fantastic car. I've gotten to spend some really great time with it. You know, three-cylinder diesel, two motors, four-wheel drive, all-wheel drive, whatever you want to call it. Great idea, great car. 200K.
So it's a. I mean, what was the thought? 150,000 euros.
Yeah, something like that.
I mean, I'm guessing that we're talking about $150,000 then, if that's the case.
Now, I mean, I understand it's a supercar, but is it really a supercar? I mean, I don't know if it's a supercar. When an M3 is going to probably be faster than it, I don't see it. But I understand that this is a whole. I parked next to a stupid Bentley today, okay, just to get me off my soapbox. And, again, this is a different one. This is that coupe thing. I don't even know what you call it. But I parked next to this – a Continental. I parked next to this Bentley Continental today, and this woman gets out, and she's got this Gucci bag with all this gold on. And I'm looking at myself, and I look at my car, and I'm like, why you buy that thing? The only reason why you buy that car, which costs like $220,000 – is because you want to be obnoxious and you want everybody to know you drive an expensive car.
So you know what's interesting?
So this to me is the BMW version of that, but it's air quotes green. Yep.
So here's my thought. Here's my thought on that. I think the opposite. So just and FYI, I think the opposite of that Bentley is the V12 SL600 that I commute next to often, going down into Chicago. The thing is the most stealth-like $180,000 car you could ever imagine. And, nobody would ever expect that it's anything more than $80,000 or an $80,000 Mercedes, but it is. It's an SL600. Not an SL600, a CL 600.
Yeah,
okay.
And, you know, it's interesting because every time I look at the guy, I think to myself, there's a guy who wanted to lay down the cash on the nicest thing he could buy while still being anonymous. And to some degree, even though it's not the car I would buy, I have to kind of respect that. You know,
I agree.
He's buying it sort of for himself at that point, which is, you know, I think kind of what we're doing with the 1M. I mean, you know, if we wanted to go out and spend, I think, you know, either of us wanted to go out and spend 45 to 50 grand on a car and be noticed, we wouldn't buy the 1M. We'd be buying a used Bentley or something just ridiculous. And I think that's the difference there. And I think, you know, Michael, there's no question that a few owners of that Vision car, whatever it will ultimately be called, are going to kind of be in that boat a little bit. They're going to be buying that thing because it's the green choice for the Bentley owner.
Yeah, then that's what I'm saying. I respect BMW's decision to build such a car because, you know, they wanted to have this high-end car. Everybody's been saying BMW needs a halo car, crap, supercar, blah. But, I mean, in the end, BMW already has a bunch of halo cars, and they kind of are anonymous, and that's what makes it so great.
You know what's going to be more impressive than the Vision? And this is something that hit me about a minute ago when we were talking about this. The mega city vehicle, and I agree. I don't know if it's going to be called an i1 or i3 or whatever, but that little car that is electric-powered and 100% carbon fiber. That will be way more impressive.
100%. I thought it ran on an aluminum subframe.
But the car, everything else.
The monocoque is carbon fiber.
Which is the only car that's like that that's not 200K. So, more, I mean, yeah.
Or more. McLaren is talking about how cheap their car is. I can't even remember the acronym, the name for it. But, I mean, and that thing's going to be $250,000.
Right. So, I agree with you.
Think about what that means from an engineering standpoint and the availability of this technology moving forward. Because clearly they've achieved some sort of economy of scale to be able to produce this car. Theoretically, it's going to be a mass market.
Yeah, They will. Hopefully.
Well, I mean, they're working. They're making progress. I mean, we're talking about theoretically an affordable car that's going to be a city runabout for generally a mass market audience that's going to be carbon fiber. They've achieved something. I mean, it's not a Koenigsegg. It's not a Ferrari. It's not, you name, who's made out of carbon fiber these days?
No, nobody.
Nobody that's on a supercar. You're right.
Yeah, except, and that's the...
Unless you want to call a Tesla carbon fiber. I mean, that's got a carbon fiber body, but not a monocoque.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, the monocoque is the... And on SGL carbon fiber, you know, they're doing great things there with carbon fiber, folks. It's going to be pretty fantastic.
Yeah. It's interesting. You know who else is doing interesting things is Lamborghini. Of all companies, they have partnered with Boeing, and they've been working with Boeing for years now out in Washington State, near where SGL and BMW have set up their factory. And they've created a carbon fiber material that's actually lighter and stronger than traditional carbon fiber. So there's a lot of development left in that space. And even where BMW is going to be in 2013, it doesn't mean that things aren't going to get better.
On that note about the megacity, I just want to interject there. I saw a Chevy Volt on the road today.
Really?
I did. I drove behind it. Interesting.
Really? You know, did that kind of make you proud to be American a little bit?
No, actually it didn't.
I knew you'd say that. See, I would actually have a tinge of patriotism behind that car. I don't know. I can't quantify why. Like, I think I would.
Well, no, because Gabe, honestly, not even that. My reasoning for, I was basically driving behind it, looking at it, and like, oh, I contributed to the development of that product.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, there's your tax dollars at work.
See, that's the way I looked at it, Gabe, and I know that's me being pessimistic and everything, but if you gave BMW that amount of money, what do you think you're going to end up with? I mean, seriously, we'd have a hydrogen highway, all the cars would be carbon fiber, we wouldn't have all this crap going on, and yet we end up with a Chevy Volt.
Well, we don't have that. I mean, the truth is we don't have that, and what we do have is GM, and I'm not one of these people who thinks that every single person at GM is an idiot and they should be, you know, should just be dissolved. I do think that.
I don't think they should be dissolved.
I think that they have some good products and they're getting much better. And, you know, the truth is, I would probably buy a Volt before I'd buy a Prius. I mean, granted.
Oh, granted, I would do the same thing.
Money than a Prius, but, you know, I would do it before a Toyota. I mean, Ford products are great. I mean, there's no reason why an American company can't be great. Now, of course, this is a BMW podcast, and why do we love BMWs? 100 reasons, and all of them, you know, all of them are sort of the antithesis of the American automaking sort of, you know, history, really.
No, and that's the thing, too. Like, I think that Chevy, GM, you know, that whole group of car manufacturers has come out of their funk or their drunken stupor, however you want to put it. I think they're out of their little box and they're realizing, like, oh my God, we can't just make big ass trucks and tell people to buy them. So I'm very happy with the new products they have. The Cruze is actually a really great car. It's good stuff. Ford's been making good stuff for years.
Yeah. And I had the Fiesta as a rental the other week, and I have to say it was a really nice car. I mean, it was very cheap and as well it should be, but yeah.
Well, and it's a cheap, but it's a very cheap car. It comes in at a really low price point. And if you enjoy driving it, Ford did their job. I mean, I'm definitely of the opinion that they've got the best, you know, product lineup thus far of any of the big, what, 2.5? What do you consider Chrysler? Do they even exist anymore?
I don't know if Chrysler's making cars. Are they still making cars? I know they spun off Dodge to make Ram, and Ram has its own truck division, but I didn't know Chrysler was still making cars. Gabe?
Well, they are, and they just released the 300C, the new version of it, actually, today. So they are. They're getting there.
But wasn't that a facelifted version of the... Yes. What version? What's it that based on? It's a Mercedes, old, right? From what, 1995 or something?
Not the worst car to base a Chrysler on, I might add.
Yes, but it's not a young vehicle.
No, E-Class. But you're right. You're right. There's 100 reasons why the American... And this is a show unto itself. There's 100 reasons why Chrysler will die, I'm sure, in the next few years. who knows if it's actually going to happen. But regardless, I think the BMW sub brand is very exciting. I'm excited to see what happens with Mini in conjunction with it as well. So,
give me a break. You couldn't come up with something more creative than I.
Well,
what are you trying to be?
I have an expensive Apple commute every single day. So something like a BMW iCar, it speaks to me at this point. I'm a little tired of filling the tank.
Yeah, well, it's true. I mean, it would be much cheaper. There's no question about it. And you've got, let's say you've got a 20-mile, let's say it's a 40-mile commute. Shouldn't be a problem. All 100% electric. Easy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I should sign up for that, too. My fuel bill is like $700 a month.
Yeah, your car's more fun than mine.
Oh, it's a hoot. And it also loves tires.
I've heard it's got an appetite.
You would be surprised how much my ZHP loves tires, as I found out recently.
Oh, it loves tires also? I think that's a BMW thing.
Well, and you've got the 265s in the rear.
Yeah, they're a little bit big.
Mine are 255, so they're not that much smaller, and they're 18-inch, so it's pretty much the same size. And I can tell you, that is not a cheap tire.
No, not in PS2 format. No, it is not.
No.
Yeah.
Unless you have the word Sumitomo attached to it somehow.
Yeah, we don't go that way.
Yeah, good. I always laugh when I see the Craigslist ad for the M3 with Sumitomos or whatever. And it's not a bad tire, but it's like, just aesthetically speaking, it's probably not quite right.
That's like going to Jack's House of Gas and putting premium in.
Yeah, their heart was in the right place. They just couldn't commit.
Yep.
To the right tire.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. It's
absolutely so we've been all over the place tonight, Gabe.
Yeah.
We covered all the bases, though, didn't we?
What's that?
We covered all the bases, though, didn't we?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've got, and as we mentioned, we're going to have a ton of shows coming up around the first of the year, heading to Detroit. We're going to have some interviews, of course, tons of photos. We're going to be gearing up for that shortly. So, yeah, obviously, be ready for that. And we'll talk about the 1M. We're going to see it in person as well. And, of course, we're going to have pricing on it. Beyond that, we've got the M5 debut coming up. And I would imagine maybe even a concept car or two.
Oh, yeah, possibly. Yes.
So, lots to think about, and no question about it. But
we have to do the end of the show prices right. Sorry, we have to do that. Matt, what do you think the cost of the base 1M will be?
49 and change. However they rounded up to be a dollar off of 45,000.
Wait, so 44.9? Is that what you're saying?
44.995, whatever the industry standard is to fudge those first two digits. Hmm. Yeah.
Now, I would say that would have been my guess, but just to be different, I'll say 45.9. Although I hope you're right.
It's a 1,000, yeah, I suppose. That would make up for the cost of the package you have to buy.
Yeah, well, I'm going with 46.995, which I said it was 47,000. I'm going to go $47,000, including destination and handling.
There you go. Well, you know what? We're going to find out in about, I'd say, 2 weeks?
Yeah.
I suppose one of the questions is, what, if any, discount will there be on a European delivery?
Oh, we can't discuss it at this time.
No. to be covered later?
To be covered later,
TBD.
Yes.
To be covered later. Well, on that note, of course, questions, comments, concerns, you can hit us up on the contact form on bimmerfile.com. If you have a topic that you'd like to hear us talk about, be sure to send it over via contact form. And of course, if you'd like to rate us on iTunes, feel free to go ahead and do that. We've got a bunch of ratings up there, and more the better as far as we're concerned. But until then, until about a week and a half or so, we're going to take a small break. This is David.
Michael Prost.
Good night.
All right.